Okay, let's begin. In Perek Dalet, we were in the middle of our second round, going through the last few psukim of Sefer Yoel. Okay, there are only 73 psukim. 73 psukim was Ayin Gimel psukim. It feels like we've been doing this like for a year. Okay, in any event, Yud Ches, we went through yesterday the Mitzudas. All we were able to get through, believe it or not, after 2 days, we only got through the Mitzudas. We got sidetracked. I don't have any Charot. I think we spoke about some very good, important concepts. Now let's go through Rashi's. Let's see Rashi and some of the Mepharshim. Back to Pasuk Yud Ches. Okay, I'm not going to even read the Pasuk because we read the Pasuk already twice. Pasuk Yud Ches says, Afike Nikoim Moitzomayim. Okay, we might as well read the Pasuk again. Page 258. 258, Perigdal, Pasuk Yud Ches, V'hoye, it will be by Yom on that day, times of Mashiach, Yitfu, Hehodim, Osis, the mountains will drip with rain, V'hagva ois, Telach, Necholof, and the hills will flow with milk, Tolafike, Yehuda, Yelchu, Moyim, and the valleys will flow with water, U'mayon, a spring, Yis, Hashem, Yetzev, Hishka, Esnachal, Hashitim. Rashi says, what is Afike? The water, Mikoim, Moitzomayim, a place, a source of water. How then is that it's where the water goes forth? The word moitza, lashon of yetze. Okay, I don't really have any other thing to add to this. Well, how is the afike? This bothered me when I was preparing. How is the afike Yehuda Yelchu Moyim different than the Mayon Mibes Hashem? There are two different sources of water. There's a source of water coming from the afike Yehuda. And then there's another source of water coming from the Mayon, Mibes Hashem Yetzi, like we described already twice, the trickle of water that comes out of the Kodesh HaKodashim and gets larger and larger into the size of a cord of thread, into the size of a small river, ankle deep, knee deep, a boat cannot pass. And why are there two different sources of water? The only thing that I remember seeing somewhere is what? Well, what does the Pasuk say? It says, V'chol afike Yehuda yelchu moyim.
Did we read the Rashi yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Mikoyim moitzo mayim.
And it will water with
No, that appears to be an entirely new concept.
Oh, that's the Targum. Oh, okay.
Rashi, the Targum also says.
He quotes the Targum. He translates it as, it will water the valley.
That's the mayon. Look at the Targum. Vayihi b'idono hahi, it'll be at that time. Yiraboin turayo chamar, the mountains will increase with wine. Mires. Okay, what does it mean, mires? I don't know. Viramosa, the valleys. Yigdon tuva, it will grow goodness. Okay, that's the milk. That's the milk. Okay, yigdon tuva, he's saying it will grow goodness. Now comes the part that we need for our discussion. The whole pitzidei ves Yehuda yehochun maya. Now, I'm assuming the word afike, obviously the translation of the word afike is pitzidei. Okay? Then, there's a vav. There's a vav, and it says, umabua. Umabua means there will be a spring. The base makdisha de Hashem, yehe nofek, will go forth, vihi mashke yas mishar shitin. It would appear... Was it okay?
Yeah.
It would appear that we're dealing here with two separate things. There is the Afike Yehuda, Yelchu Moyim, and then there's something called the Mayon. So the question is, why do we need two different sources of water? So I did come across something in the Mepharshim, perhaps we'll see it in a few moments, I don't remember, maybe it was something on the page, and the answer is the first water refers to real water, water that we drink. The second water, the Mayon, is spiritual water. Hoy kol tzomei l'chu l'mayim. Anyone who is thirsty, go to water. Chazal tell us, ein mayim ela toira. Okay, mayim is toira. What? Yefutsu mayinoscho hachutsa. Your teaching of Torah should spread. Okay, so it's curious as to why there are two different sources of water. And by the way, this year already is, I think, the fifth or sixth year in Eretz Yisrael where there's a drought. And it's a very, very big problem. And even though Eretz Yisrael, they are ahead of their time in technology, in what they call salination, where they take the salt out of the seawater and they can turn it into water. However, the studies have shown, and they're very nervous about this, is that people who only drink seawater that has been cleansed thoroughly from the salt, salinated water, appear to suffer a statistically higher degree of heart disease than those who drink natural fresh water. So even though in Eretz Yisrael they make it sound almost, they make it sound in the news is that they've solved the problem, right? They've solved the problem to the drought, and it's no big deal because there's an infinite amount of water in the Mediterranean. Okay, even though it sounds like in the news that they've solved the problem, but it's not true. It's a real problem because no one yet knows the effects.
Irrigation
is not a problem. Irrigation is bad. Well, even that we don't even know. We don't know the produce. If you're going, you're irrigating the fields with water that would ordinarily be destructive to the land, and you remove the salt content, and under a microscope it appears to be perfect, and that water is what is producing everything that we eat, all of the grain, all the produce is coming from that water, and the animals also feed off that produce. So everything is really coming from water that's the desalinated water. And no one really knows the effects. It's too early to tell. And the earliest statistics that they have is that this type of water, it's not good for human beings. No one knows why. Why not? Under a microscope, it looks fine. Under all the studies they've done, it looks perfectly fine. So why then do these people who have, for the last, whatever it is, 30 years that they've been experimenting with this, who've only drinking this type of water, do they suffer from a higher degree of heart disease? No one knows.
Meanwhile, the Kinneret, which
is very low.
Lower and lower.
It's dangerously low, and they're threatening that next year, if they go into a seventh year of drought, they're going to have to severely limit people's intake of water. And that's not just a problem for Eretz Yisrael, it's a problem for the entire Middle East, and they even are afraid that the wars in the future, Rahman al-Islam, is not going to be over territory, over occupation, it's going to be over water. It's not going to be about gold, about oil. It's going to be about the basic necessities in the Middle East, this limited resource of fresh water. Who's going to be able to benefit from the fresh water? Oh, but we have the desalinated water. Israelis are the top. They are leading in the industry of doing this. Not everyone is so convinced that it's so healthy. It's so healthy.
A lot of things happen. The Sahara's growing 15 feet a year. They said the desert is getting.
It's too loud.
Every year.
It fell down.
15 feet a year. Sounds very little, in terms of the space, but over a century, it's a lot of land.
Okay, so this now takes on a whole new meaning. When you read this pasuk about the Most HaMashiach, if you read this, 500 years ago. Is it what? What's wrong?
I was going to say Cape Town is the first major city in South Africa throughout the world that by April,
right.
A couple of years, the city might be totally
wiped out.
Wiped out with the water,
right. unless they import water.
Into the southwest United States also, because Las Vegas
is right, right.
A town with water.
California
drive.
Big problem, right. Iran also has this problem. Iran also has a very, very big water problem.
They say they created with Iran. They created a way which they took the water out to something.
They're fighting over water. They are redirecting the flow of natural water. It's a very, very big thing in the Middle East and in America and in California. It's a very, very big thing. If you would read this pasuk, you see what Nauvoo is all about. If you would read this pasuk 500 years ago, what's the big deal? Water. There's water everywhere. Water is free. Right? Not anymore. Not in New York City. Not in New York City, it's free. But what does this mean over here? What does it mean over here? Big deal. What's the big deal? today it's a very big deal. It really is a big deal. And the Navi, he saw this, Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, he saw this when he wrote this 2,000 years ago, is that it's right, it's going to become a very big deal. And when you're telling that when Mashiach is going to come, there's going to be water, wow, that's a big deal. We're now in the sixth year, severe drought in Eretz Yisrael. It's a big deal that the Pasuk says, don't worry, there's going to be a replenishing of the natural resources of water without all this technology, which we don't really know, do not yet know the effects of what it has on the human body to drink this water that has been, seawater that has been manipulated, has been desalinated. There's definitely something very significant about what it says here in Yemos HaMashiach about water. Okay, let's go forward to the next Rashi. The Rashi, V'hishkas Nachal HaShitim, Kimashmoi. We discussed yesterday in great detail the significance of Shitim. Shitim is based Pa'ar. We're not going to repeat that. Just a reminder from what we learned yesterday. Nachal HaShitim, Kimashmoi. Rashi says, V'yashke Yas Meshar Shitim. This spring that will go out from the Kodesh HaKadosh will water the plain of Shitim. Okay, next. Umidrashoi. Yichaper al avoin pa'ar. Okay, that's really what we discussed yesterday. That's really where I got it from. This whole idea is the reason why we're coming to mention over here Shitim is because that is where Klal Yisrael, they were nichshol in the sin of worshipping the Avodah Zarah of Pa'ar. And Moshe, when he was buried, it says in the Pasuk, Mul Beis Pa'ar. I think, in fact, in Rashi says that Moshe's kapara. It's a very interesting concept, is that Moshe, I mean, I told you about Drush, an elaborate Drush yesterday, about Pa'ar, discipline, Musar, got into a discussion, but the symbol of Chazal tells us that the Tzadikim, Misas Tzadikim, is a Kapara. When a Tzadik dies, whatever this means, their death brings Kapara for Klal Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, his death served as an atonement for the fate of Pa'ar. And that's why Moshe was buried Mul Beis Pa'ar, opposite Beis Pa'ar. In Pa'ar, that was the terrible chet of Avodah Zarah, the Benois Midian, the whole story. They worshipped the Avodah Zarah. His death served as a kapara. You see again, history repeats itself in that in the time of Mashiach, again the sin of Pa'ar never goes away. We think we focus on the chet of the Meraglim, we focus on the chait of the Egel. Those were the two big chatoim. The Egel and the Meraglim. Those two chatoim, they are with us ad hayoim azet. It's a fair shapostic of yom pokti, pokaditi. Hashem says, on the days that I get upset, I get angry, and I visit upon you punishment, there will always be mixed into the punishment a small dosage of punishment for the chait of the Egel. And what about the Meraglim? Hashem says, you cried for nothing on Tesva'av, it will be a bechia lidoiris. The fact that we still observe Tisha B'Av is clear as day that we are still suffering from the chait of the Meraglim. So these two things are without question with us ad hayoim hazeh. What? And bechiras yoisev. Well, bechiras yoisev, where do we see?
Yeah.
Over here, Pokti Pokadati, and you're saying something very interesting. You're saying over here, the code word, I never thought of it, the code word for Geula is Pokod Pokadati, right. and Yosef, where do you have by Yosef Pokadati?
Yeah.
So since Yosef, who was the one that was involved in the chait, he was the victim of the chait of the Bechiras Yosef, and he used those words, and those words are also used in reference to the punishment L'doiros for the Egel. So he's trying to suggest that there's a connection between the chait of Bechiras Yosef, which lingers in the chait of the chait of Egel. Very fascinating. So he's saying those are the big three.
Well, that's why what the Abarbanel says three times in the parasha by Vayigash and by Echi, Yosef keeps saying, Biato al Kayotzru, Biato al
Kuro,
he said, not now.
Future. Later. It's always,
yeah, you're going to have what you're going to pay for, just not right now.
You can't escape it.
So, he also said, put the
to the children. That's the code word for the Gula.
Right.
Moshe and Moshe in turn, he had the code word pokoi pokadati in a chanami. So he's saying, so it comes out lamaskana. He's saying something very, very, very good, that there are really three sins that linger until the coming of Mashiach that are out in the open: mechiras Yosef, Egel, and the Miraglim. But here, it's so fascinating, there's no mention of the other of those sins, no mention whatsoever, and the only thing, at least according to Rashi, that we're going to focus on Moshe Mashiach is the sin of worshipping the Egel of the Avodah Zorah of Pa'ar. And the Mayan that's going to go forth, Mibes Hashem Yetzir Yishkas Abnachal Yishitim, Rashi says, Yechaper al Avoyin Pa'ar. What about the other Chatoim, the other big three that we just mentioned? They're not mentioned, yeah?
I just want to add, he quotes several of the Midrashim that say that there was something in the water, and that's why
that's what they sinned.
Yeah,
the water.
So this is a kapara, it's a cleansing of
of what caused you to sin. There's always to every sin. That's a scary part. It's like it's not in your free will. Your free will.
No, it could spur on further.
It's like the Hashem removes the Hashkacha process and allows you to enter into a situation. I'll tell Derech Ateva, you're gonna be heated. You're gonna there's something in the water which caused them to have a taiva to be nichshol. Okay, that's an interesting idea. But what about bechira? So sometimes if a person doesn't merit, Hashem takes away the protection, and he enters into a situation that al Derech Ateva he has a taiva that he cannot control. It's funny, because I just read an article, which, I don't know, if it's probably, I'm warning, probably science fiction, okay? Probably science fiction, but it was interesting, is that the dangers of taking too many antibiotics. Today, there's a very big problem of child obesity, and adult obesity, and there are people that are starting to suggest that it's connected to the overdose, the overuse of antibiotics, and the way they explain the science, again, this might be science fiction, so don't take anything that I say literally, but this is what it says, and it's very interesting, is that when you take antibiotics, in your stomach, there are healthy bacteria which tell your brain, I am no longer hungry, stop eating. I call it the Visovata germs. In your stomach, there are different types of bacteria. They're healthy bacteria, they're called probionics, and these probionics, they tell your stomach, your brain, Visovata, I'm satisfied. Don't eat anymore. When a person takes one round, 10 days, like the doctor tells you, don't stop in the middle. I just took some antibiotic. Don't stop in the middle. It wipes out, it cleanses. It's a miracle drug because it's mamash nisim in the flois. It cleans out the poison, but there's collateral damage. The Visovata germs are wiped out. And you know how long it takes to replenish from one round of antibiotics? 2 years. It takes 2 years to restore the Visovata germs after taking one back. Dr. Friedman, am I saying that told science fiction?
It's interesting.
Probably.
Science had an article when you lose a lot of weight, it said how long, you know, skinny people seem to react differently to calories than obese people. And they said, so how, if you lose a lot of weight, can you change your body chemistry to that of a skinny person once you become slim? And it said it takes 2 years.
2 years.
So for the cells to become that type of a body of a slim person, it would be a 2-year period.
Okay,
and that's
obviously.
Why usually people who diet.
Right,
they gain all back. Okay, listen. We all know. It's a grain of salt because there are so many factors. Your DNA, obviously, it's genetic. Obviously, this is a little bit blown out of proportion, I believe. But there must be a kernel of truth to it, right? Even if it's true, it's just a kernel of truth. So you say very interesting is that there al derech hateva you have a taiva. Don't eat. You're bal bechira. I can't control my taivas. It's something genetic. It's something. It's a nisoyan that you can't handle. So he's saying, but they came to Shittim, there was something in the water that they drank, and they couldn't control themselves. They were nichshol in arayos. So what about Bechira Chavshis? You have to say is that they were nichshol before, where there was free will, And thus Hashem removed his protection from them, and they came to an area where there was poisonous water, which caused them to further their taiva unbeknown to them. If they had the siyat, the shmaya, they would not have ended up in that location where they would have drank that water, which would put them in this situation. It all starts somewhere before. In fact, the Yom Leram, we say, we'll get this a little later on, but the Yom Leram is in the Vina Malkenus, and in the Slichas, we say, first in the Averos that we do b'mezid, in one expression, and then the Averos we do b'shoigeg. So, the Farshim asked the question, should be the other way around. We normally start with the sins that are lightweight, and then we proceed to describe the sins that are more severe. And one of the answers I've seen given is that a person never comes to be nichshol by doing an avera by accident unless it was preceded by an avera, a related avera, that he did b'mezid. A person has free will, and he makes a bad decision, he does an avera b'mezid, that creates a reaction by HaKadosh Baruch Hu where he does not protect him, and then he comes to be nichshol in doing that similar avera b'shoige, by accident. So every accident is not really an accident. The reason why it happened by accident is because you were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Why were you in the wrong place at the wrong time? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not protect you from not being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Why did Hashem not give you that extra dosage of protection? It's because in the past you've chosen to reject HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this type of situation. So every action leads to Hashem's response. Hashem doesn't openly punish you. Avera goyreres avera. So it's the sequence of events. When you first say the averos that are done b'mezid, and then the averos that are done b'shoigeg, we're not trying to, we are describing the sequence of events, how it came about a person did an avera b'shoigeg. So all you're saying over here they came to shitim. The fact they were nichshol in arayos was because there was something poisonous in the water which caused them to have a taiva that they could not control. That does not mean they're innocent. That does not mean they're not accountable, because in the past, these people have done something which they did have control over, and they chose to make a wrong decision, and that led to HaKadosh Baruch Hu not protecting them, allowing them to enter into the wrong location, which where one thing led to another, and they now found themselves in a situation which was beyond their control. Let's go further. Mitzrayim, Pasuk Yitas, we learned Mitzrayim will be Lishmam and Edom. The question over here was, why do we mention specifically these two countries, Egypt and Edom? Yesterday we learned in the Mitzudos Tzion David that we're referring to the beginning and the end, and it goes without saying, everything in the middle. Mitzrayim was the first nation that afflicted, tortured Klal Yisrael. The Inui Va'avodum, the Inui Oysam Arba Me'oshana. And if you want to go further, Avram Avinu, before he was Avraham, when he was still Avram, when he went down to Eretz Canaan, and there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, and he went to Egypt, what happened right then and there? Paro abducted his wife, Sarai. So that was the first event in our history where Klal Yisrael, or the father of Klal Yisrael, suffered in the hands of a foreign nation. What is the last? The last is Edom. We're suffering today. We are today in Golos Edom. So the first and the last, and the Mitzudos said everything in between. No one is getting a free lunch. Pasuk Yitas. Simachan zel zel lepuranus. We compare. Now he's saying an entirely different idea. Ata, now what's the idea he's saying? A fascinating idea. The only reason why there is today an Edom is because of a Mitzrayim. We're referring to the time of David HaMelech. David HaMelech went to war against Amalek, against Edom, the nation of Edom, not really Amalek, I'm Edom. And what happened? The king of Edom escaped where? To Egypt. They took him in as a refugee. Egypt could have very well locked the doors and not allowed the king of Edom into Egypt as a refugee. And then David and his general, Yoav, would have caught him, would have wiped him out, and there would never have been a nation of Edom. Edom would have come to an end right then and there, and they would do it. And how would history play itself out? We don't know. We don't know what would have been. But one thing is for sure, Adam would not have been a player, would not have been part of the equation, because they would not exist. The only reason why they existed was because Egypt was evil, and they saw Edom evil, and likes attract one another, and he took him in. Egypt opened their doors to take in the king of Edom in order that they could live another day and make more trouble. So that's why we're connecting here in this pasuk Egypt, Edom to Mitzrayim. Pasuk Yitess, the Edom is smachan zel zel lepuranos. Atom, we find she'ilulei Mitzrayim. If not for Egypt, lo haisa Edom, there would not exist a nation called Edom. Shenema, ki sheishes chodashim yoshav sham Yoav. Yoav was the general of David before there was a falling out between David and Yoav. But Yoav was the general. He was never really a falling out. Yoav chodash yeshav sham Yoav. V'chol Yisrael ad hichris kol zochar bo Edom. Until Yoav, the sar tzva of David, he wiped out every male in the land of Edom. Uchsiv, it says, Vayivrach Adad, Hu va'anoshim Adoimiyim. Adad, I think, was the king. He and his people, they went to the nation of the people of Edom. Vayimso Adad chein be'enei Pharaoh. Paro showed him favor.
Yeah, could be now it's the same thing. All these, quote, migrants going to Europe. Europe is letting them in.
Okay. So why? But why? I don't know if we can judge. We don't really understand. They're doing it seemingly out of humanitarian reasons. They're not doing it because they recognize they enjoy the evil and they want to perpetuate evil, because it's a threat to them. It's a threat to
the London mayor lets them in.
They feel they're not a threat. They feel that it's not. It's a chesed. I don't know if you could say something so bad about them.
There's an article in the paper. Yeah. One of the major writers that said that the reason, like, Germany and England let in a lot of these
Syrians,
all these people, because the country is aging.
That's right.
And they need,
don't have enough workers.
They don't have any population.
They thought they would fill in, like we have Mexicans doing work
right.
us. So they needed that.
America also is having
that. Out of
right. Right, so there are issues, but it doesn't appear to be over here. It seems to say over here the reason why the pasuk is telling us, the reason why Paro allowed Edom, is because we have a common enemy, the Jewish people, and therefore we want to guarantee you survive. So together we can torture the Jewish people. That is an act of wickedness, an act of evil, and that's why we're putting them here together. If the reason why Egypt would take in Edom was because of humanitarian reasons, then they would not be held accountable. Adrava, that would be a very big chesed. It all depends upon what the kavana is. Vayimsa Hadad ben b'chin de'eni paro, chen who has a connotation, undeserved. It would appear that according to the rules of the game, Edom, there would be a threat to the nation of Edom, would be a threat to Egypt. Egypt should not in any condition take in Edom. By taking them in, it will be a threat to their nation. So why then does it say he took them in? Chein. Chein means you don't deserve it, but we're going to do it anyway because I have another reason. What was the other reason? We both hate the Jews, and two are better than one. So that's why they're held here accountable. The word chein here is a very critical word to understand the guilt of Egypt and why it's not considered to be an act of chesed. Yeah? When Shlomo married the daughter of Paro, they put the stick in the earth, and in that developed Italia Shel Yavan, Rome,
which is Edom.
When he took Paro, very good, fantastic. So you see it, fantastic. You see another connection between when Shlomo embraced Egypt, the outgrowth was Edom, amazing. So that's obviously.
Kalei Seir,
let's. Oh, the father-in-law is Yishmael.
Right.
And over here, so over here, it's over here you're getting to, that's really the Malbim, Abarbanel, is that Egypt is synonymous with Yishmael. Because that's a Chiddush. That's a Chiddush. The Pashtus is, Rashi doesn't say that over here. Rashi makes no mention and says that Egypt is any relationship whatsoever to Yishmael. That's a new thing, you're right, that's a more modern approach. In a Chinami. But over here, Rashi does not mention that. Rashi goes very simple.
That was written approximately in Rashi's days.
That period, that was written in Rashi's days. Rashi is focusing on Tanakh. Okay, it's an idea. Obviously, we'll see the Malbim elaborates upon it very much. But Rashi is not working with that approach. Rashi is saying very simply.
Malbim, Radak, all of them.
They were a little late, because they were much later than. Malbim is much later, right?
Yeah, but Radak was the rich.
Okay. But over here, Rashi just says very simple. The Hadad Shoma, ki shochav David, and then when Hadad heard that he died, then Hadad left Egypt and went back to reestablish Edom and take revenge. And we know did he take revenge. The Holocaust is unfortunately a product of what happened over here. The fact that Egypt took in Hadad, it's really amazing. The fact that there was a nation called Edom, which produced Nazi Germany and produced all the other the Crusaders, the Hulu, and all the tsars that we have, all was a result because Yoav did not succeed in conquering and killing these people. Adad, Hulva Anoshim. And who do we blame? We blame Paro, whoever the Pharaoh was at that time. He took them in.
Paro?
What?
Did Yoav make war with Paro?
Perhaps. Either you're with us, Bush W, or you're against us. If you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. Did he come to regret those words? What? That was the plan, but it didn't work because you couldn't go to war. You can't go to world war with the whole world.
In the big picture, it wasn't time to finish off
Hashem's hashkocha. Right, Hashem did not allow. What would have been if he would have succeeded? So does that mean the Klal Yisrael would not have to suffer for their averos? There would have been another nation, probably. We don't know how. We do not know how things would have played out. But that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. It's like people talk about the state of Israel. This should have been. That should have been. This. It's irrelevant. This is the facts. This is what happened. Now deal with it. Deal with the situation on the ground. Don't fantasize what could have been, what should have been. You have to deal with the world of reality. The world of reality is Paro took in a terrorist. He harbored a terrorist. And therefore, Egypt is guilty. They are the cause of much of our pain. We think of Egypt, no, they're over there, they're a third world country, they barely have an economy, they barely have what to eat, they need to be supported by the United Nations. They are, and the big, powerful country in this world today is Edom. You know, Edom owes their existence to Paro, to Egypt. They should support Egypt lock, stock, and barrel because the only cause of their existence, it says here in the Pasuk, is the nation of Paro.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, they should give a speech in the UN when they appeal for foreign aid. They can read over this Rashi. They should read this Rashi in the United Nations when Egypt appeals to all the other Edom for foreign aid. The Hadad Shamaki Shachron, it says, he became an adversary for Shlomo. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Achale Zo V'Zo. The day will come when both of these nations will be obliterated. Mechamas B'nei Yehuda, B'shvil Chamas She'asu L'Bnei Yehuda, because of the violence that they have done to the children of Yehuda, Asher Shafchu Es Damam, they've spilled their blood. Pasuk of Aleph, now this Pasuk we learned yesterday, two Perushim, what it means, V'nikesi, let's see Rashi now, V'nikesi, Damam Lo Nikesi. Rashi is learning here just like the Perush of the Mitzudos David. He's not giving us a literal translation. Notice Rashi over here says im. Mitzudos does not say the word im. According to the Mitzudos Hashem, it's a guarantee. It's a guarantee that the Umay Sa'olam will be forgiven for the sin of stealing our wealth. According to Rashi, there's no guarantee that even that's going to happen. The af im. Notice this fine, subtle difference between Rashi and the Mitzudos. V'af im anake oisam mishor avera shabiyadam. Even if it will happen, such a thing, the possibility that I will forgive them for their other sins, umeiro oisha asuli, that they've done to me, which he's not even referring to money. The Mitzvah stuff, it said this refers specifically to the sin of chomos, of violence, of stealing their wealth. But one thing is for sure, Hashem says, domom shel b'nei Yehuda loy anakeh, I will never forgive them for spilling the innocent blood of the Jewish people. Loy anakeh mehem, emos ha'iti yezos, when will their punishment come? When will their reckoning come? Bizman shakadosh baruch hu shoychein b'tzion, the days of Mashiach, that's when they will be punished for their sins. Okay, so the Mitzudos and Rashi, when it comes to the word of Nikesi, they're pretty much similar. We put a comma. The basic idea is you put a comma after the word of Nikesi, comma, not like the Tame HaMikra, which connect the words together, Nikesi, comma, the Domom Lo Nikesi. Even according to the Mitzudos, is a guarantee they will be forgiven for the sin of theft, but Domom Lo Nikesi. According to Rashi, maybe. Possibly. There is a possibility, but there's no guarantee. Vini kesi, comma, even if I do decide to forgive them for sh'or averos, but domom, the blood of the Jewish people, lo ni kesi, they will never be forgiven for. And when will that happen? V'Hashem shechein b'tzion. To remind you, we learned in the parish of the Rid. The Rid says, there's no forgiveness, period. We read as if there's a missing shin. Vini kesi, domom, sh'loi ni kesi. And according to the word vinikesi does not mean forgiveness. It means vengeance. It means revenge, punishment, nokom. Vinikesi domom, I will avenge the blood of the Jewish people in the times of Moshiach, sheloi nikesi, regarding what I have not yet punished, I have not yet exacted revenge for. I've been extremely patient for 2,500 years, all of the things that the Goyim have done to Klal Yisrael. This, you have to really read the words backwards. This, that was Sheloi Nikesi, add the letter Shin before the word Lamed Alo, this that I have not taken revenge, their reckoning is here, now it's going to be Vinikesi, I will take revenge, Tamam for their blood. When? V'Hashem Sheichin B'Tzion. Let's go to the Radak. Back to Pasuk Yutches. Radak begins back on page 259. On the days of Moshiach, when the Goyim come to an end, Tiyah Gedol is going to be a very great blessing. The blessing is you will not have to work. Everyone will get a handout. There's no Yigiyah. As if it will be as if the mountains, these are all metaphors, the mountains will drip with wine, and the hills will flow with milk, two words which mean exactly the same thing for our purposes, it means will flow with milk. We can compare this to the hills, even though it's the milk. You're just saying there's a grammatical difficulty in this pasuk because in this pasuk it literally means the hills will flow. Hills do not flow. Milk flows. The milk will flow on the hills. So why does the pasuk mislead us by telling us that the hills are flowing? He doesn't really answer the question, at least though he makes note that the grammar of the pasuk is a bit difficult, but from what we're trying to understand, the idea we understand is that it's going to be a blessing that's beyond our understanding, and maybe when Mashiach comes, we'll really understand what it means, that the hills themselves will flow milk. And the valleys are the, not that the valleys will flow water. The valleys don't flow, the water flows. The water will flow in the valleys. And even though the grammar is not precise,
when we say Eretz Zovach
Chalav, the land that flows, there could be it's a little bit better. There, Eretz Zovas, doesn't mean the land itself flows. I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe the grammar is also, I don't know the rules of grammar. Here he says over here that it's more difficult. The Hagvaos Telachna. I don't know the answer. Maybe there is no difference. Good point. I don't know. Let's next words of the Radak, page 261. On the very top, the top left, yesterday, this parallels what it says in Sefer Yecheskel, v'hishkes nachal hashitim, there'll be a trickle of water that will come out of the Kodesh HaKodashim, and it will water the nachal hashitim, kitargumai meishar shitim, ki ha'imik yikoi nachal, a valley is called nachal, the targum, the meishar is means a valley, and it's the same word for nachal, bein sheyesh b'mayim, bein she'ein b'mayim. Whether the nachal is called a nachal, whether there's water that's flowing, whether there's no water, do not make a mistake and think the word nachal only means a location where there's water. A nachal is nothing more than a piece of land that potentially can serve as a channel to guide water along its path. Vayachbru avdei Yitzchak banachal, and there was no water yet when they were digging there. Then water came later on. Another example, someone who lives in a nachal, you don't live in water, you live in dry land. He's just trying to point out that the word nachal does not automatically mean water is flowing in this piece of land. Nachal is just a piece of land, again, like I said, it has potential to serve as a conduit for water, period. The hagoin, Rav Sadia Zal, Perash Nachal Hashitim Hu Hayardein, not like what we learned, that Nachal Shitim refers to the place of Baal Peor. The word Shitim is the Yardin. Ki Yardin Hu Karv L'mokam Anikra Shitim, the Yardin is near that location. L'fichach Samchu Elov. So therefore, according to Rav Sadia Gaon, this has nothing to do with the Nevuah. Has nothing to do with what Rashi says, not like Rashi, that we're dealing over here with the issue of Peor. Baal Peor took place in Shitim. This is not Shitim. This is the Yarden. Being the Yarden is near Shitim, so we associate it with Shitim. But it's nothing to do, period. Now, Mitzrayim. Now we come to the idea of Mitzrayim. Hashem will wipe out two nations, Mitzrayim and Edom, Pasuk Yitess, and then Radak. Zohar, Mitzrayim, ve'Edom. Why? So here is what you mentioned before. Mitzrayim, ba'avur ha'yishme'elim. Okay, so Egypt has come to embrace the ideology of the Yishmaelim. So they are the modern day Yishmael. The Edom, Bavur Malchus Roimi. Edom is the Malchus of Rome. The Edoshtehu Umos Keno, and Goivrois Ze Yomim Rabim. These are the two major nations, the two major ideologies that have taken over the world. The Talmidei Yeshua Notri and the Talmidei Mohammed, Talmidei Mahmud HaMeshuga. These are the two different ideologies which have taken over the world. V'tiyena ad eis ha'gula, these two nations, these two will fight it out until the times of Mashiach. The Crusades go on, the Crusades continue. V'heim chevsa reviyasa, this is the fourth wild animal that was seen in the dream of Daniel, of Nebuchadnezzar. Chevsa reviya b'maros Daniel in Sefer Daniel. V'zochar mitzrayim b'avur yishmaelim ki eishas yishmael chaysa mitzris. So he's going back to what you said, the chaysma, like he said today in the Slichus, he's mentioned today in the Slichus, is that Yishmael was the wife of Yishmael, he went to Mitzrayim. Eishas, the wife of Yishmael, I'm sorry, v'atikach lo imo isha mi eretz Mitzrayim. A different idea. Hagar was the mitzris, and we learn this on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. We learn this. Vatikach loy imoy isha me'eretz Mitzrayim. So the wife of Yishmael was a mitzris, and therefore that is why Mitzrayim is associated with Yishmael because they were married. K'mo shenemar, vatikach loy imoy isha me'eretz Mitzrayim. She was also a mitzvah. We mentioned many times, she was given as a gift. How did she come into the picture, Hagar? When Sarah was abducted, and Paro almost died, when Paro released Sarah as an appeasement package, he gave Avram a gift. He gave him a gift. What was the gift? The gift was Hagar. Hagar was the gift that Paro gave Avram. So Hagar herself was a mitzris. Therefore, yicheso uma hazos leMitzrayim. That's why this nation is associated with Mitzrayim. Is associated with Zohar Edoim, Avur Malchus Roimi, Bavur Ki Malchus Roimi, Rubam Adoimim, Rome, most of them come from Edom. Can also Yeshaya that who this is not unprecedented. What Yoel is doing here was already done by Yeshaya. The Parashas Kirvu Goyim, She Alachurban Roimi, Kamosh Pirashnu Sham, there as well in Sefer Yeshaya, there the Radak learns that there's a connection between Yishmael and Edom. V'yamazibavur, Kimalchus Shem Rubam Adamim, Hamachsikim Bedas Hanayz Shem. So notice over here in the brackets, like we always try to say, does not necessarily mean they are biological descendants of Edom. The those who live in Rome, those who we call, who we associate today as being Edom, are not necessarily biologically connected to Edom, the son, Edom, Esav, the son of Yitzchak, but being that they have embraced the ideology of what Esav represents, they are called Edom. I once heard live from Netanyahu, if it walks like a duck, it's squeaks like a duck, squack like a duck. And what else does it say? Crack, it goes with all these expressions. And, you know, it goes through a whole, it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck, it squacks like a duck, and it, what else does? Then, it's a terrorist.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's laughing very hard. Right? Remember that? The March on Washington, that was a long time ago, that's what he said. Therefore, Kimalchus Rami Rubam Adamim Mamachzik Medas Hanachim, the Afal Peace, Shinis Arvu Bohem, even though they're all intermingled. Imohem Amim Ram Kum Kumoshnis Arvu, even though the truth is that they're really, Edom really is a land of immigrants. United States of America, we call it Edom. Is it true or not? Who knows? We assume that's what Edom, right? Western civilization, the Western culture is Edom. Western culture is just all immigrants. It's a country of immigrants. So why is it called Edom? Most of the country is, what is America already? How many today are still pure European immigrants? How many in America are still pure? Everyone is they're immigrants, some immigrants. And therefore, he writes here, you see, this is prophetic. Kumoy, even though it's mixed, the Afal Pishenis Arvu Bohem Amim Rabin, how can we call the whole Western culture Edom? In the Western culture, there are so many nations that have absolutely no blood of the true Edom in them. The same thing is true when it comes to Yishmael. The whole Middle East and even the East, they're all in the Far East, a nice chunk of them, they're all Muslims. Muslims, they're not blood descendants of Yishmael. It doesn't matter. This is the ideology that they have accepted upon themselves that makes them who they are. Gam kein b'malchus Yishmael. Nikroim al ho'ikor. We follow the Ikar, I guess the one, the Ikar in this context really means the ideology. Umelech Kesar Adoimi Hoya, the king of Kesar, the Caesar, he was a descendant, he was a true blood descendant of Edom, it says. V'chein bin kol ha-melech ha-machrav, asher hayu b'roimi, u'shteihu umos ha-ilah he-reu li-yishol, both of these nations, Edom and Yishmael, the crusaders and the Yishmaelim, they caused great harm to the Jewish people. Shevet Yehuda u'binyamin shagolu b'neihem, the last, this was the Golus of the Churban Bayis Sheni. The Churban Bayis Sheni was only Yehuda and Binyamin, because the Aseres HaShvatim disappeared long ago, already 500-600 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, the Aseres HaShvatim disappeared. And now, the Churban Bayis Sheni, Klal Yisrael, where it was intermingled amongst the nations of Yishmael and Edom, Shagol B'neim, V'shaftu Dam Kamayim B'Artzam, and they suffered greatly at their hands, the Crusades, the Inquisition, the expulsions, the Holocaust, the Tsars of Russia, V'chulu V'chulu, the Edom, Shimalchus Romi, Hi Shachriva Bayis Sheni, Alidei Titus HaRasha, V'shaftu Damam V'higlu Oysam Ben Ha'umois, the Al Galusenu Zenema Pasek Hazeh. Therefore, Radak says this refers to Churban Bayis Sheni Lefichach Lezocher Elo Yehuda. That explains why it only mentions Yehuda, does not mention Yisrael, because they went into Galus long ago. Ki Aseres Hashvatim Shehigla Melech Ashur Lo Shavu Ariyam, did not return yet. Lo Hayu B'Shushus Shtei Homois Ha'ile, they are not under the jurisdiction, the authority of Yishmael and Esav. Where are they then? Who knows? But we're referring here to the Churban Bayis Sheni. Okay, next part, next radak, and next page.
This time we say the Goyim, they're all different than the original Goyim. But by Yidden also,
No, you can't say that.
No, I know we don't.
Jews
say
are Jews.
Yes, I understand that. But there's definitely a distinct difference between Ashkenazic Jew.
Yes, certainly.
So how is that possible?
There's a tradition that the Jews after the Churban Bayis Shni, the Jews who settled in Spain, who made their way to Spain, the Sfaradim are descendants of Yehuda, and the German and French Jews are descendants of Binyamin.
But why do we
there is such a Messiah. What?
Well, I'm asking, why is there a distinct difference between Sephardic Jews, a physical difference between Sephardic Jews and
in their blood or DNA?
There isn't.
Because no, where they were,
they're much darker. They're much darker than we are.
Because that's where
they're up north. They're up north. They're under the sun.
You think that's the reason?
Yes.
The environment, there's no doubt about this, the fact. Look at the Goyim. Forget about Jews. This is a natural reality in nature. A human being lives in a certain part of the world. He is affected by the environment. And the body adapts. I don't want to use a dirty word, but the body evolves. There's evolution. Creatures adapt to their environment.
So
human beings also.
Because of the environment? Yes.
Definitely. There's a factor. Is that the only difference? No, but there's no doubt about it. It's a major factor. And also, another thing which the tradition, this you cannot prove in words, is that, like I said, there's a Mesorah that the Jews who settled in Spain after the Churban Bayis Shni, eventually, not right away, took time, but the Jews who eventually navigated to Spain, the Spanish Jews are descendants of Shevet Yehuda. And the Jews who settled in France and Germany are descendants of Shevet Binyamin. They're two different brothers, two different people. And each one of the 12 Shvatim had a very different personality. They're Yud-Beis Shiftei Kos. You can imagine what it would have been like in Klai, just like you're saying over here, a fascinating concept, is that we all tell you, you have a real Sephardi comes to Shul, and a real Litvak, a real Ashkenazi. They're worlds apart. Could you imagine that another 10 of them? Another 10 Jews? That each one you can say is a completely different breed? Completely different breed? You know how complex Klal Yisrael would get? But the truth is, that's what it was like. That's the way it was. That's the way it was supposed to be. There are 12 Shvatim. Each Shevet has unique characteristics. Look at the Birchas Yaakov. Look at the Birchas Moshe. Each one of the Shvatim is completely unique. Men are from Mars. Women are from Venus. And Jews are from somewhere else. And when you want to break up all of the Jews into different sections,
Jupiter,
it's amazing what will become. I always tell you 100 times, I always like to toy with this idea about the Beis HaMikdash, the Kinos on Tisha B'Av. There are 24 Mishmaros of Kehanim. And the Mefarshim make it clear as day, each one lived in their own separate city. They were isolated. They had nothing to do with one another. Each Mishmar had their own city. Their own city. That means they had their own way of life, their own minhagim, their own nusach hatzila, their own hashkafa.
But they were all Kohanim.
They're all Kohanim, they're all Jews. And that means when they took over the Beis HaMikdash, it's not so far-fetched to say, make believe you put this in modern terms, modern day, let's say the Chabad Mishmar, the Kvar Chabad is their week in the Beis HaMikdash. They come to the Beis HaMikdash on their week, every 24 weeks is a different Mishmar. Kfar Chabad. So what do? The first thing they come into the Beis HaMikdash, they look at the menorah, put the menorah in the basement. Take out the V menorah. The V menorah. No round menorah. In our week in the Beis HaMikdash, we have a V menorah. Not a round. And it's kosher. There's no one that will tell you that a V menorah is not kosher. Even if you hold that the menorah is... We don't even know what Rashi means. Rashi's words are so vague, it's impossible to decipher this. Rashi means it was round, it was a V. And therefore that means they're both kosher.
The base Yehuda Chumash has a round.
Okay, no round. And then the Lechem Haponim. What was the shape of the Lechem Haponim? Was the shape like a boat, a round boat, or was it a square? Each Mishmar, and even if it was a square, you can probably find in the Mishmar 10 different opinions how to make it. How to make it. So each Mishmar, it's their week, they do it their way. The Nigunim, they sing the Shira. What Nigun did they sing? So you ever hear a Sfarish Nigun? It's a whole different world. The Ashkenazi Nigun, a whole different world. Each, when they sang the Shira, each mishmar had its own traditions. Even the Big Day Kahuna, what did it look like? You go look in the Rishon, what did the Kohen Gadol, he wore the Big Day Kahuna, what did it look like? You know how many opinions there are for the Me'il? We're all brainwashed. We look at the Arshkel, we think that's it. Arshkel is just presenting you one of 10 opinions. You go look at some of the Mefarshim, there are a lot of things available today. They go and they decipher even the Aron. The Aron, we have the Aron. Some Rishonim learn the Aron had legs. You ever see a picture of the Aron that had legs? You never saw this. Aron goes on the floor. Who says it goes on the floor? It's from the, you read the Pasuk Pashra, there are legs. How many tabois were there? So you read, there are 4 tabois. Some Rishonim, no, there were 8 tabois. Read the Pasuk. The other Rishonim that the Rashbam says, there were 8 rings. There were 8 rings and there were 2 sets of badim. One set of badim was permanently, was always removed, and one always stayed attached. You know, everything is subject to much interpretation. We have followed one mahalich to keep things simple, but it could very well be that each of the 24 mishmaris had their traditions, had their mesorah, how they did things.
The Aron Kodesh, they couldn't change.
Who says they couldn't change?
You couldn't go into the...
Why not? Well, for a purpose, you only can't go in for no purpose. For no purpose you can't. But if you're going in for a purpose, there's a reason you can go in. We have that Shlomo took Malchus Shavua into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Obviously, he felt there was a need. There was a purpose of taking her in to show her. There was a need to show her. Shlomo didn't know the halacha. He can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We don't find him being blamed for going. We find that it was not proper to show. The grandfather of the Nebuchadnezzar. We don't find that he did an aveira by going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We find that it was not proper. It was hashkafically not the right thing to do. The complaint Chazal have against Shlomo HaMelech for taking the grandfather of the Nebuchadnezzar in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was not a halachic complaint. It was a hashkafic complaint. Al pi halacha, you had good reason to go and show the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the grandfather Nebuchadnezzar. But hashkafically, it's not the right thing to do. So, what about halacha? There's a good cause, there's a good reason. So we really do not know. We have really no idea of the way, the way it worked in the Beis Hamikdash. All we can imagine is, if there are 24 mishmaros, and each mishmar lives in their own private little city, and we know amongst Klal Yisrael today the diversity. We all know that everyone has different traditions, different minhagim. It's not so far-fetched to say that when each week a kohen, a mishmar, took over the Beis HaMikdash, they brought with it a whole change of scenery. They brought into the Beis HaMikdash for that week their minhagim and their mesorah, which was different than the week before. And Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And if you would schedule yourself to come to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm a visionist of Chassid, and I'm coming, I have to plan my vacation to go to Eretz Yisrael, to go bring some korbanos. I want to go, and my Rebbe is there. My Rebbe is going to be serving in the Beis HaMikdash, and I'm going to watch him. My Rebbe is Chassid, and the Chassid, they're going to be singing the visions and nigunim, and they're going to be doing the avodah the way they do it according to the minhag of Vishnitz. I don't want to go when Satmar is in control. They're not my people. I'm not from their machaneh.
I definitely don't want to go when the Litvak is.
What about when the Tzionim are in charge? What about the Tzionim? What?
Before you said that, the Shevet Yehuda settled in Spain.
Yes.
Binyamin
in France and Germany.
Yeah, but what, the Kahan and Levim obviously were in both places.
Well, Kahan and Levim is not Chevrolet. How do we from both? Obviously.
Kahan and Levim all over.
Obviously, right. So even though... There's an island
off Tunisia called
Jerba.
Yeah. Which is Irshikul
Kahan. Yeah. Yeah. The Mesorah is.
The Mesorah is.
That's where they went.
They took one of the doors of the Beis HaMikdash and they used it as a raft. And they went.
Okay.
And it's still there.
Okay, there are a lot of different Mesorahs. This is your door. This Mesorah is well known. I'm not making this up. This is all over the place. The Mesorah that Spain is Yehuda. France and Germany is Binyamin. That's where they ultimately, they took a long time. They went to Rome. They were taken as slaves to Rome. And eventually, when they got some freedom, they moved around. First, it was Beitar, however it happened. And then after the persecution, they spread all over the place. Poland, Russia, other parts of Europe, and Bechulu,
well,
Jews.
Even after the first Korban, there were Jews all through Europe. And between
between the first and second.
Yeah. The first and second.
Between
the Aseres HaShvatim.
No. Aseres HaShvatim is a different story.
Yeah. Okay. It's complex.
In Spain, they were eaten from...
Before even. Right. It's obviously very complex.
But it's not necessarily 100%.
Of course not, right, of course.
Rashi is a descendant of Malchus Beis David.
Rashi is the son of Malchus Beis David. Okay, and Rashi was in France, and later in Germany, back to France. Rashi had three tukufas in his life. He went to Rashi went to in France. No, in Germany. Rashi
was a lot of them.
Rashi started off in France. Rashi had three tukufas in his life. He started off in France. He grew up in France. He went to study in yeshiva in Germany. And then after he was there for a long period of time, he developed very much in Germany. And then he went back to France to establish his own yeshiva. So Rashi went through three different phases. Okay, let's go further. Next, on page 262. Naki nichta ba'alef. Let's just read the radak. We're out of time. Let's just read the radak. Naki nichta ba'alef. Vinikesi, right? So he's running over here. He's coming over here to address. Where is he quoting from? This is Pasuk Yutes. Pasuk Yutes says, Shavku dom noki innocent blood be aratzam nichta the aleph v'chein val titin aleinu dom noki bo al derech nichecho aleph nasi navi. Okay, this is a grammatical form. The aratzam hakinu livne Yehuda or lemitzrayim be'edayim. So Hashem says in Pasuk Yutes, Asher shavku dom noki be aratzam. Where did they kill the Jews? They killed the Jews either in Eretz Yisrael or they killed the Jews living in Egypt. And in Edom, pasuk Yichaf Yehuda Mitzrayim veEdom Yehu Shemama v'lo Yeshu Leolam Av Yehuda Leolam Peshev Mitzrayim and Edom will be destroyed, but Yehuda will live on forever. Okay, now pasuk Chaf Aleph is the hard pasuk. Let's see how the Radak translates these words. Vini Kesi Mikaspam. He is translating off the bat. I will forgive them. He's already the third Mefarish we've learned together that translates the word Vini Kesi to mean I will forgive them, not I will punish them. Miloshon Noki. Naki means innocent. Hashem will declare them innocent. Why? From what sin? From the sin of theft, of stealing the wealth of Klal Yisrael. Mikaspam uzehavam shelakhu anake. I will forgive. I will declare innocent. Ha'umais the goyim ki gam Yisrael yikhu mehem le'osim, because we will take it back from them. And as we said yesterday, it's an extremely difficult thing to understand. Why should that make a difference? Just because we'll get the money back 2,000-3,000 years later, why should that give them a pass? Very hard to understand. V'yiyu lohem lishalol. All of the assets of the realm will become the spoils of the Jewish people, and thus they're in avol midamam. By the end of the pasuk, even though v'ni kesi, I will forgive them for the sin of gezel, but for the sin of murder, that I will never forgive them. Avol midamam sheshafru. Loi anake oisam el nefesh tachas nefesh, they will die. Nefesh hashayfchim oy binehem acharehem, the nefesh of those the murderers or their descendants. Why should Hashem punish their descendants? Lo yumsu avois al bonim ubonim lo yumsu al avois. Doesn't that principle apply to goyim as well? Why not? Another very difficult question. Why should in the times of Mashiach people who seemingly have done nothing, why should they suffer for the sins of their ancestors? What's pshat? Are they? Can you really say that? Who are we to judge? It's very hard to understand this. El nefesh tachas nefesh, nefesh ha-shayfchim, oy b'neihem, acharehem, ki b'chol kesef, zav, sheba'olam. You're saying over here is that if a guy, you pass by a guy and he doesn't spit on you, what do they say? What do the oilam say? It's not because the guy doesn't hate you. This is lazy. That's the only reason why he doesn't kill you, right? Okay, so you want to say, then you're saying, so therefore they really hate us just as much today, and that's why the Eichel is Ma'aseh Avoseihem, so they're going to be killed. I hear what you're saying. It's hard to swallow. I'm not the only one that has the difficulty swallowing this. Whatever, it means whatever it means. The Iker is Emunas Chachamim. You have to have faith in what it says. El Nevesh Tachas Nevesh Nevesh Anshechem Boibneim Achareyem Kibuchol Kesev Vizav Shevoilam Yishayidnu. with all of the reparations, it won't make one bit of a difference. You cannot pay bail, you cannot pay a koifer for murder. Period. Now the yoyah. So now we've already learned four perushim for this pasuk. Now he's quoting Targum Yoinasan. Okay, it's on the page. We're going now. He's quoting it. So now let's see it. The Yoinasan hidik tam damam im vini kesi shetir game ud ispiro is dimhoin im amamaya. He writes, I will punish their blood. I will punish them. Tuv. Again, the word tov in English means shuv. Should make believe the tov is interchanged with shin. Again, and I will punish them a second time, a whole new perish. Tov ano osid leisparo, Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, the Asher Shechinte Bitzion. So now the fourth perish, okay, the fourth, which is really the third, because three of them, the Farshim, Kimat say the same thing. The Rid said one parish, and now we have the Targum, and he has a novel interpretation of this pasuk. Vini kesi damam, meaning, I will punish them. I will punish the goyim for murder. Targum, udi ispiro is dimhoi min amamaya, period. And then Hashem says, loini kesi, and after I punish them, they're not going to be innocent. I'm going to punish them again. It appears that the Targum is saying that the first time it says Vini Kesi, it means Nokom, vengeance. And the second time it says Vini Kesi, it means innocence, to go free. Everything we've learned until now, we're consistent. Either it means innocent, both means Vini Kesi. Yeah, Vini Kesi. I will forgive the Goyim for the sin of theft. But Domom, for murder, lo ni kesi, I will not forgive. In that interpretation, the word vini kesi twice means forgiveness. The other interpretation of the rid means vini kesi domam. I'm gonna kill them. I'm gonna take revenge. I'm gonna punish. Ed shin sheloi ni kesi, for this that I've been patient and I have not yet punished. So in that interpretation, the word nikesi, both in the beginning and the end, means what? It means revenge. It means to punish. Vengeance. It appears that Targum is saying, split it. Vinikesi domam, period. Connected two words. I will punish the goyim for the sin of murder, period. Oh, now the goyim, you think you finished? Payday came, you're ready, got what you deserve? Just when you think you're finished is when it's first going to start. I'm then going to punish you again, because there's more to punish. There's more. Loini kesi, even after I've punished you once, you're not forgiven. Loini kesi here in the second time means, I'm not forgiving you, I've punished you, but you're not forgiven. And thus, the connotation is, I'm going to punish you again. When will this happen? V'Hashem Shoichem B'tzion. That's the Targum. Very amazing Targum. It's unbelievable Targum. Ude is poroes dimhoin min amamaya. The day will come when there will be payment, punishment, for the blood, dimhoin, the blood of the Jewish people, min amamaya, from the nations of the world. Period. Tov. And then again, ano osid le'ispiro'o. Again, I'm going to punish you a second time. How did the Targum get the words, again, I'm going to punish you a second time? Because he's translating the words, lo ni kesi, means, even after I've punished you once, you're not forgiven. You're not forgiven. If you're not forgiven, the implication is, mechlal lav, ata shemea hein, I'm going to punish you a second time. Who says this? Omar Hashem. So says Hashem, the Asher Shechinte Bitzion. Okay, so this is the novel translation of the Targum. Last words of the Radak, Hashem Shachem Mitzvim, Taimo Lamala, Shama Lamala, Vidar Yilol Lom Yeshu, Vyom Hashem Shachem Mitzvim, Megam Li Olam, Ki Li Olam Yat Yer Tshchinas, Mitzvim, Ach HaShetoshev, Kishom Yosef Mashiach, V'chein Chocham Yecheskel, Chosam Yecheskel Nivosa, V'shom Yer, V'shem Yer, Yom Hashem, Yom Hashem Shama. We will sign with Hashem being there. Okay, now let me just tell you, we're out of time, I can't hold back, let me just tell you what it says, and the other, this is the best pshat. the sixth pshat, or really the fourth pshat of what this means. This is the most satisfying pshat of them all. Vinikesi damam means Vinikesi damam lo nikesi. Okay, let me tell you what it means outside, and then I'll try to fit in the pasuk inside. Is the best punishment, the best way to punish someone else is to succeed. Our enemies, what do they want? What do they want from us? They want to throw us in all the nasty things that you hear from Iran, to throw us into the Mediterranean. They want to obliterate us. They want us to disappear. The enemy wants to obliterate the Jewish people. How do we take revenge? How do we take revenge against them? We destroy them. We nuke them. We destroy them. You know what the best revenge, the sweetest revenge is to succeed. Success. If we ignore them and we succeed and they see us succeed, they go out of their mind. They go crazy. It's so much more painful. So here, Vinny Casey, Hashem says, I'm going to take revenge. Comma. Nikesi means revenge. Revenge. How will I take revenge? Don't think I operate like you. Human being, when he takes revenge, he goes for the blood. Hashem says, Domam lo nikesi. When I take revenge, I don't take revenge by spilling the blood of my enemy. You know how I take revenge? The Shechina will come and rest in Tzion. This is the ultimate revenge. Okay, I always told you this. I actually told someone this last week. Okay, I told this whole thing. People tell me I'm totally out of my mind for saying this, but I'll tell it to you anyway, is that there's a lot of talk about, did Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, really die in a bunker, commit suicide and burn himself? So people tell me, you total nonsense, shtus vehevel, conspiracy theories, what are you reading, what are you looking at, out of your mind for saying this? But there are people out there who I love this type of conspiracy theories, and they go, and they've done an enormous amount of research. If Mayer told me I'm nuts for saying this, he totally disagrees, he's researched this whole thing, but I'm into this stuff, and people wrote books on this, and they've discovered new things very recently, which put all the pieces together, and you read all the unclassified files now that have been come out. There's a lot of stark evidence that he escaped to Argentina. And there's a frum guy who wrote a whole book. He was interviewed by Ami magazine, amongst other, Hasidish magazine. They said to him, Shaita, what are you doing? There are still survivors alive. You caused them so much tsar by going and bringing this up. They have so much pain. Just ignore it. Whatever, let it be. Whatever. Even if he was alive, there's no way he could have lived past 1950, the mid-50s. He had Parkinson's. There's no. What are you doing, Shaita, bringing up nonsense? Who cares? It's not relevant. So he said, they even wrote this in the Satma magazine. Even there they wrote this. He says, you don't understand. And the Satma, they gobbled this up. They love this. Even they love this. He says, you don't understand. If Hitler did escape, if it's not a conspiracy theory, he escaped, you know what that means? He lived to see the establishment of the state of Israel. There could be no bigger revenge for Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, to see that Eretz Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, has been given the Nachala of Eretz Yisrael. And the Umo Yisrael Mamakir this. Vini Kesi, Hashem says, I'm going to take revenge, but not like you people. The way I take revenge is not through the spilling of blood. Damam, to spill the blood of the Goyim? Liney Casey. That's not the way I take revenge, Hashem says. The way I take revenge is for Hashem Shoichein B'tzion. Hashem rests his Shechina in Eretz Yisrael. Even the Satma love this. What the guy answered. Even they who can't deal with that. They hear the vart. This epis is something to it.
I don't get
mad,
I get even.
All right. Finish them tomorrow.
Well, okay. He became a...
for retirement.
Tomorrow you start a new one.
What?
Tomorrow you start a new one. You're
going to
continue.
Nothing to show. Rule of war. No,
okay,
we're
not
going to
be in March. So tomorrow you're going to put the stuff on tape.
Mirat Hashem. I'll try. Okay. A little more to do.
What's the half a minute that Hashem's going to forgive him for stealing?
I don't know. I said it already 3-4 times. It's. I have no clue. I have no clue.
Mean that.
I told you that. I don't understand. I told you that. It's impossible to understand what it means. 2 years.